On the eve of the shattered moon, a great dragon came to consume our intrepid reviewers. On the eve of paradise, a great horror came to grace our intrepid reviewers. On the eve of the end of the week, a great rage came to overpower our intrepid reviewers. This is the 5-Point Podcast. This is our review. I am Burke, and with me...
Well, as always, this is Bobcat. You know, I'm not feeling very intrepid this week.
Welcome to How I Am Every Week.
Yeah. You know how we usually have this good cop, bad cop thing, where you're the rage-filled one, and I'm the one with the information, and I try to be fair to things?
Oh, screw that.
Can we switch, please?
No.
Oh, I guess we can both be bad cops.
I'm not even a cop. You know they revoked my license. Too many cocaines.
You're a danger to everyone in the force, Burkeon. You're a loose cannon.
As far as I'm aware, Sylvester Stallone never did cocaine. Except possibly when he made that porno. But you don't like reviewing pornos, so we'll save that for Burke's Corner.
Oh, Lord. Hello, everyone out there. This is the 5-Point Podcast.
I'd rather be reviewing a porno right now.
Well, there might be a better plot if we were viewing a porno. This week, at the request of friend of the show, Flacktrap...
I hate you.
We reviewed an anime movie called Origin Spirits of the Past.
Why?
Now, here at the 5-Point Podcast... You know, Burke, last couple weeks, I keep messing up what the 5 points actually are. I'll put you on the spot. Burke, what are the 5 points we look at when we analyze an anime?
First impressions is number 1, story is number 2, characters is number 3, presentation is number 4... Final thoughts is number 5.
You make it seem like it's not actually all that hard and I'm kind of stupid.
That's because you are and it isn't.
Okay, so first impressions. Let's just get this going as fast as possible.
Okay, I didn't really have a whole lot in mind. I didn't know anything about it. The cover looked kind of generic. But I was expecting good things. My friend here, Bobcat, kept telling me it would be good because his friend said it was good.
Now, in retrospect, it occurred to me that what he said was, it was all right, or it was okay, or it was pretty good. He made it sound like sort of an average experience now that I think about it.
Yeah, we'll get to that, folks. So I was going into this with some degree of hope. Maybe, finally, I could watch something that was made for me that I could enjoy.
As opposed to last week where there was Squid Girl, which, while it was a fine show, was not Burke's cup of tea.
No. In fact, I'm not sure I'll ever watch another episode again beyond what Bobcat forces me to review.
I watched more episodes. It stays good, people.
Even in milk. Anyway...
Squid Girl says crunchy, even in milk, Degesu.
I hate you. Okay, Bobcat, what were your first impressions?
Well, I kind of already covered it. My friend said that it was pretty good. I wasn't expecting a lot from it.
Well, next time you should wait until I'm done before you interrupt.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
You're right, I'm unrepentant. Point 2, stories. I just interrupted you again, and I remain unrepentant. So there, ha.
Actually, can we play story presentation? Because I believe that story should come before final thoughts today.
Okay, you know what? Just this once. Well, okay, people. We're going into uncharted territory. We are deviating from our 5 points.
You know, for the first time in...
Ever.
What, 8 reviews?
This is number 7.
7 reviews? Seriously, this is not... Be happy we haven't started wearing dresses, which...
Well, wait, you mean you aren't? Okay, so anyways. So point 4, presentation. Presentation is everything that isn't characters or story. It's stuff like animation, music... and other design choices.
Do you wear a sundress? I'm curious, what kind of dress you wear? Is it one with flowers on it?
It's a hypothetical dress for the sake of a joke.
So
moving on.
You're not actually wearing any. You're doing this naked! How could you? This is supposed to be a family-friendly affair.
So, presentation.
And you got your jolly bits hanging out everywhere, flopping in the breeze.
Okay, so, presentation. You know, this is a very pretty movie.
It is honestly the best-made thing we have seen so far. It has the best animation, though it is slightly flawed.
Right. This is a production from an anime company called Studio Gonzo.
I'm sure Bobcat is just itching to spurg out on that, so I shall allow him. Exactly what are the flaws?
Well, actually, here's the thing. I've watched enough reviews of Yesu Otaku and Professor Otaku and various other otakus to know that for Studio Gonzo things, they have a gambit where the first few episodes will look really, really, really pretty, and then they'll start having scenes where the quality control is completely lacking in order to save money because they don't evenly parcel out their budget. This time, it was sort of there occasionally, but it was, yeah, this was a really pretty movie. It's just, there was some stuff that I noticed, but I only really noticed it because I knew it was Studio Gonzo and I was looking for it. So yeah, you can thank Yesu Otaku for this little bit of nitpickery.
And meanwhile, Bobcat is violating the prime directive of not referencing things better than ourselves. Thanks a lot, Bobcat.
We haven't violated the prime directive as long as we aren't sharing warp technology with anyone. Incidentally, if you want to buy our warp technology, email us at darthbobcat@gmail.com.
That's what you're calling it these days. You'll want some lube, folks. It doesn't go down easy. Right, my thoughts on the animation. I didn't notice it because I wasn't looking for it. And only really at a distance is there any kind of problems. Other than that, it is the best animation we've seen, the best CGI, the most flawless integration of CGI. It is really, really good.
And the character designs look good, although some of the clothing choices are questionable in that sort of Final Fantasy later series kind of way.
Yeah, but really, I've just gotten used to that with Japanese shows. I don't even notice it anymore.
I kind of noticed that our main hero was dressed with his midriff exposed.
I try to ignore that, though it's really obvious on the cover where he is. The cover is a huge spoiler, but we'll get to there. Another huge spoiler, actually. This is another one of those covers. Bobcat watched the dub. I watched the sub. I think we can agree in both cases that it was pretty strong. All the characters sounded like they should. No one had poor acting.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly thought it was a pretty good dub. I didn't have any complaints. You know, sometimes, little mini spoiler alert for the review, I had some trouble with what the characters were saying. But the way they said it was never really suspect.
But yeah, so it looks good. It was made good. It sounds good. The music was good.
Yep.
This had a theme, didn't it? I think this had the first theme song I did not mind.
You mean during the opening scene?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really remember it, but it went well with the opening scene.
It was kind of generic, but it wasn't J-pop, and for that I am eternally grateful.
Right, this sounds like a soundtrack that you would expect from a Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it was a fairly good song, and it had fairly good music. And, again, the CGI was good, the creatures were creative when we got them, the creepy things were creepy, even if they were supposed to be the good guys, apparently.
I like little details in the background. Like, I'll just, you know, since we're sort of doing this out of order because Burke wanted to get the positive stuff out of the way, it's set in a post-apocalyptic world, and there are all these nice little background details that let you know it in a subtle way if you were paying attention before they even said it. At one scene, you have some characters walking down an old set of stairs. They're an escalator stairs.
Yeah, there are ladders everywhere being just used as regular walking places, and it's all very neat to look at. And we're going to touch on that ladder thing in a little bit. Okay.
Yeah. Kudos to the art department. Kudos to the music department.
It was well edited, too. It was really, really well made.
I thought that some scenes kind of went on too long, but I guess it was more the writer's fault.
Yeah. We're going to get to that, though. So yeah, it was really well made. On a technical level, this is a good movie.
Just to finish up that thought, if you don't really care about plot or story or things, and you just want to sit back and watch some good animation, you can do a heck of a lot worse than this. On a purely visual level, this gets an A.
Yes, so yeah, if you are one of those people, and you want to watch this, you might want to stop listening to this review. Because now we're moving on to part two.
Story.
Now,
Okay.
I will begin. Because the first thing we see is a little thing that promises us dragons. There are no real dragons in this movie.
Now there's one.
No, there isn't a real dragon. This is the second movie to promise me dragons in the opening that we have reviewed that did not give me satisfactory dragons.
You know, that's an excellent point. You know, if this keeps going on, we'll have our own little... Like every review, we talk about how there's the pink-haired girl, which is our term for the dits. If this keeps going, we might have a new term.
The dragon?
The dragon for...
The disappointing dragon.
Yeah, the disappointing dragons. Getting close to being a law of film that if the film starts with a dragon scene in the first scene, we're not going to like it too much in the end.
Hint, we're going to be doing Aragorn next week.
I'd rather watch Aragorn than this.
Oh, God. Okay, anyways. Dragons. Then we see a forest being made on the moon, and then the moon explodes and the forest comes to life and attacks the Earth.
Now, that was a really cool scene, actually.
It was a little confusing on how it worked, but, you know, whatever.
Now, at this stage of the movie, you know, we have been given no information about this. All we know is that the great dragon seed came from the sky and destroyed the world or something. Like, there's a little text scroll at the start of it that says this. Then we have this scene. And so at this point, you have no idea. I suppose you know that it takes place on a Earth. No hint of the time, no hint of whether this is an alternate universe or not. So this is like how the movie is set up. So at this point, it could have been a sci-fi story, but I was getting a strong fantasy vibe from it.
I kind of guessed it was going to be a sci-fi story when I saw what the forest looked like, what it was in.
So the first thing that we see after that is we see two young boys, I'd say about 15 at the oldest.
Maybe. I guess one of them might be 16.
One is our main character, Agito. The other one is named Kane. Kane is unimportant.
Agito?
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Agito.
Trust me. I'm very familiar with disappointing people who are named Agito.
Okay. So you have the two of them going down to steal water from a well. Well, well is the wrong term. It's like a huge cavern that their city is built around. So they climb down, yeah. They have water skins. And so at this point you're thinking to yourself, okay, we're being dropped in the middle of everything. We're not being given any information. But so far what we can surmise is that our main character, Agito, is a more adventurous type who...
Yes.
He's physically...
Does not obey the laws of physics.
Right, he's physically fit. He seems to be willing to take a lot of risks because he and his friend are racing down the mountain in really stupid and dangerous ways.
He takes a fall that really should have broke his back, but he didn't.
Yes. And they get down there, and they're collecting water in the skins. So at this point, I'm still thinking, okay, so is this a magic well?
No, it's just a normal well. Though Agito does make it clear that he is getting stuff for his father. He's getting the water for his father. This is something of a plot point. Later.
Something of a plot point. One of them says, I forget which one says, be careful or else the druids will hear us.
Yes, and then tree people show up and they're very threatening and all that. They look like, you know, the villains. So you think, okay, here are the villains of the movie. At least that's what I thought.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. In fact, I still sort of think that after the movie, but we'll get to that. So our heroes are being faced down by a whole bunch of these tree people. Now, tree people makes you think of an ent. They look more like, sort of like poison ivy in a certain version of Batman.
They're almost bird-like, but made of plants.
And again, they're very imposing.
Yeah.
So kudos to the art department again. However, these characters, in the grand scheme of things, this huge group of evil-looking druids who are threatening our heroes, in the grand scheme of things, completely unimportant.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yes. So, Agito, I just don't want the audience to think that anything we've seen so far is particularly relevant.
Right.
So Agito makes a break for it.
He gets caught up in some kind of stream of water, nearly drowns, finds a giant container, super sci-fi thing, And here, I had been told that this was a super robot anime movie. I had been told that by Bobby.
And I had been told that by my friend.
I believed him. I'm never doing that again. Anyways, he finds it and I think, okay, this is where he gets his giant robot. A little early, but cool.
Now, at this point, I had completely forgotten that my friend had mentioned giant robots. I guess Burke took the promise more seriously than I did.
Very seriously.
So I think to myself, in a movie written by a hack, this is where the hero finds the magical girl who's in some sort of stasis. But nah, that isn't going to happen.
The plot device girl.
Yes.
The plot device girl. That's where, in a hack movie, he'd find the plot device girl.
And lo and behold, you pan up and you see that in this thing were a bunch of what must have been cryotubes, like freezing tubes to keep people in stasis, and lots of corpses, but he finds the one tube that wasn't broken. What's inside? Is it a giant robot? No. It's a girl his age who is the plot device girl.
He finds the plot device girl, like in a hack movie.
Yeah.
Hoorah!
So this is the point where I started being less... I got sort of confrontational with the movie at this point. Like, really? I guess this is a well-used trope in anime, but
do we have to? I didn't mind it as much because I wasn't really expecting that. I was expecting him to, you know, get a giant robot. But he didn't. So I just sort of went, okay, movie, whatever you're gonna do. And the movie went on, and I wish it had.
So he wakes up the girl, whose name is Tula, and they escape to what must have been a bomb shelter, and there's a flood because the druids have decided to drain the entire water hole.
Oh, also, just so you guys know, Agito's friend mentioned that his sister was going to miss Agito when Agito grew up and left, because Agito was planning to carve out another city like his dad. We're going to get to this very, very influential and important character later. The most important character in the movie.
So, long story short, Agito and Tula escape the drowning, and we find out that, I guess you'd call her the mayor or the village elder. I'm just going to call her mayor because the people with superpowers in this world have silver hair, so she makes me think of the mayor from My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic.
I hate you.
So the mayor is talking with a representative of the druids, who are two little girls who, I forget whether they repeat themselves or if they finish each other's sentences.
They didn't do either of that. They just said, technically they kind of completed each other's sentences, but not, they more so completed each other's thoughts, at least in the sub.
So we find out that these are the representatives of, the druids are part of the forest, and the forest is the people who supply water to humanity. And because two humans broke the rules about how much water they were allowed to get, they have decided to take their ball and go home, or in this case, take their water supply that the humans need to live and go home.
There, it should also be noted that the forest is the dragon seed from earlier. It's what wiped out civilization, killed billions of people, and now basically tyrannically rules humanity with an iron fist.
Yes, humans live in fear of the forest doing something bad to them. The forest parcels out water. The forest decides where humans can live.
Forest determines who is its avatars, who is blessed, and who will die. If you are a threat to the forest, it will destroy you, no matter how little a threat you are.
And the humans are okay with this.
Some of them. There is one shining beacon of hope. See, what the forest is, to skip ahead in the plot, because quite freaking frankly, we don't really care anymore. No, cat. To skip ahead in the plot, we find out that the forest was actually a scientific endeavor to terraform the moon. They were going to give the moon an atmosphere so that people could colonize it. However, one scientist, a brave man, got a little impatient and made a mistake. And his mistake made the forest gain sentience and mystical power somehow. It's not exactly explained, but whatever. And the forest came to life, destroyed the moon, and basically subjugated the entire whole of humanity. Very few people survived. The scientist was one of them, and even now, he is working to fix his horrible mistake. To wipe out the forest or find a way to bring it under control.
Right.
He's the bad guy!
Yes, this movie treats him like the bad guy. Now, so in previous reviews, I forget which one in particular, we said that we didn't much care for James Cameron's Avatar movie. This movie has made me reevaluate that position. Because at the end of the day, as annoying as I thought the protagonists were in Avatar, as much as I didn't like the story and thought it was just pretty, deep in my heart, as much as I joked that the humans in Kvaritch were the real heroes, I knew that they were in the wrong.
At least in part.
At least in part.
Because, really, it was their home. They were dicks about it, but whatever. It was their home. They were the ones who said, no, you can't play ball here. They should have been respected in that regard. However, this is not the same thing. This isn't even the case of the forest coming to life because people are mistreating it. This is the case of a creature being created on an alien world, inexplicably hating humanity for no good reason, coming to Earth, taking over the world, murdering most of the population, and being hailed as the moral victor. This is the Borg as the good guys.
This is like if the Terminators were the protagonists of the Terminator movies.
Which, technically, one Terminator was the protagonist of two of them.
Okay, then let me rephrase that.
But Skynet, if Skynet was the...
If Skynet was the hero of the movies.
Because, what does he even do that's villainous? What does the scientist do that's villainous?
The most you can accuse him of is tampering in God's domain, then trying to fix it.
And really? Really? That's all. That's all he does. Because even the girl... Plot device girl. She is a plot device because apparently her thing, her collar bondage cell phone thing that she wears around her neck.
In the future where that was destroyed, like our future supposedly, people had these collars that would perform various functions like being your cell phone or being your key into places.
And only one person could use them because... That's always a brilliant idea. Anyway.
No. Lots of people could use them, it's just that none of them survived the war.
I thought you said only one person could use one of these.
I'm pretty sure that everyone who was in the cryotubes had their own, it's just that hers was the only one that was intact.
I don't care.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyways, he comes to her.
Wait, I think we've... You know what? No, nothing important happens. Oh, wait, no. One important thing happens. We meet Agito's father.
Oh, yeah, we should cover that. His father's a tree. Moving on.
No, this is kind of important, because it sort of sets up more of the villainous dickery of the forest. See, the forest... Okay, you can become... I think they called it... In the dub, they called it enhanced.
You can become, yeah, enhanced by the forest.
Now, all the people who are like this have silver hair, and gradually... They become absorbed into the forest's consciousness. His dad, or Agito's dad, used that power too much and is now literally rooted to one spot and is mostly overgrown as a tree.
Yeah, his father's a tree, moving on. Her collar can activate something or other that can destroy the forest. And the forest, the minute she wakes up, instead of trying to, you know, make a case for itself, not come off as a tyrannical dickhead, not try to become an homicidal maniac. No, it just tries to kill her.
So at this point, when Shunak, the scientist guy we brought up earlier, shows up, offering to take her away from this...
Horrible, horrible, horrible place.
She naturally says yes. Agito can't understand this.
Also, for the record, he doesn't make her. He doesn't force her. Oh, sure, he has a spider tank with him.
That's just their transport.
But that's because... Yeah, that's because A, it's their transport, B, they need it to survive, because the forest tries to murder them.
Yeah.
He's polite as all get out. Anyways, one thing we did forget to mention. Remember those ladder things? Well, they have ladders. They are bridges. People just run across them all willy-nilly. I have a theory about this. See, we don't see any kids beyond the main characters. and Pink Haired Girl. We'll cover her in character. She's just so important that we can only talk about her in character.
Right. We'll leave out her vital contribution to the story until the time is right.
She is just so amazing. She's the best thing about this movie. Okay. I honestly believe that this is how they do natural selection in this city. Whoever can't run across the ladders, and trust me, it'd be really easy to kill yourself with those things, or at least seriously injure yourself, well, they don't deserve to live.
They're like Spartans. If every day was a threat of being thrown off that cliff if you were deformed.
Yeah, or not even deformed at all, just sort of unlucky, or if it was raining. Not that it ever rains here, because the forest is a dick.
Yes, the forest rations out the water, so no natural rain occurs.
I don't know how that works, but it does. Okay. Anyways, so the hero's big plan is he has a walking, talking volcano.
Since we're still at the story stage of things, there are a couple of events here. So
Agito gets enhanced.
Right, Agito gives himself to the forest. This is handled in a rather quick way, because he already loves Tula, even though they've barely ever talked.
Well, let's be honest, his only other option is Pink-Haired Girl, and we'll get to that when we touch on her brilliance.
Yes. And so he sacrifices himself to the forest, knowing full well what happened to his dad, in a scene that seems really... For those of you who watched our Earthsea review, he honestly reminds me of the character from that, if he had more spine and less reason to exist.
Yeah. Oh, also, after that, he becomes a god mode stew.
Yeah.
And just kicks the crap out of everything.
They shoot a giant bullet the size of a bus at him, and he just casually catches it.
Yeah, he takes down a spider tank on his own. Jesus.
The fight scenes were pretty cool, but at that point, no one could touch him anymore.
Yeah.
Except for Shunak, but that's because Shunak is also enhanced.
Which doesn't even begin to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that the Force would have the ability, if someone turned on them, to take away their blessing, but I guess not.
Why would they even give him the blessing to begin with? I mean, they had to have known that he was going to try to kill them.
Yeah, so it's at this point that Shunak does the first actually villainous thing we've seen from him the whole movie. Because Shunak is taking Tula to the volcano to activate the Doomsday weapon. Agito is running behind. That's right, he can run fast enough to keep up with the train. Right, wasn't he running?
You didn't say that they were on a train.
I'm sorry, they're going on a train. He can keep up with the train they're on, just on his feet.
Yes. Yes.
And so, Shunak, in the first villainous thing he did the whole movie, he decouples the train, he shuts all the windows so that Tula can't see that Agito is following them. Actually, I suppose this was the second thing. The first thing he did was futilely order Agito's death without Tula knowing. And now he doesn't want Tula to know that he's about to try and kill Agito by blowing up part of the train, so he shuts the windows. So he is keeping things from Tula. So that's really the only villainous thing he does the whole movie, from my perspective.
Try to protect a little girl's innocence.
Yes.
This is our villain, folks!
Right. Now, I suppose if you were an apologist for this movie, you could say that he knew that she wouldn't go along with it, and he needed her for his plans, and so he was manipulating her. But there's also the positive view of things.
Frankly, if you're an apologist for this movie, you don't care about the story. Otherwise, you are sad every time the Borg lose.
Well, of course they're not. The Borg are evil technology.
This is evil technology! It's vegetable technology, but it's technology!
Yes, but the movie shows us that industrialism is bad because there's smoke and stuff.
So does the forest! It makes smoke! It murders people with grass dragons! At least cars don't go out of their way to kill people on regular occasions. We tend to avoid that. That's the norm for the forest!
Right, you go into the forest, you've taken your life into your hands.
No, you put it into the life of a tyrannical a-hole of a forest that summons grass dragons to murder you.
Okay, so Tula and Shunak get into the volcano, and they activate the Doomsday device. In the meantime, Agito had been using his power too much, and he was starting to turn into a tree man after about a day of having his powers. But he was able to calm down with the help of the mayor we mentioned before, who was also enhanced. And does the mayor say, "You know what? You're going up against an enhanced villain who is stronger than you are. I'm enhanced too. I'll come along and help you out." No.
This is all up to him.
All up to him. The fate of the world. You know, if you buy into the fact that the forest is the good guys, like they do, from their point of view, they're leaving the fate of the world up to one guy who got his powers yesterday and can't control them for crap.
He nearly already turned himself into a tree.
Yeah. So Tula and Shunak activate the Doomsday device, and Agito comes in to try and kick Shunak's ass. This does not go well. Also, Shunak apparently has betrayed the army of the empire he's working for, which we didn't mention because they're unimportant. They exist only as a way to get him from point A to point B. There are giant mechas, and there is a giant mecha fight, technically, but nothing comes of it.
Freaking disappointing dragons.
And friggin' disappointing giant robot action.
Why do you miss how? Bobcat, how? It was your definition.
I don't know. I started watching the movie, and I was getting a...
It was your definition!
I was getting a fantasy vibe from it. So I'd forgotten about the promise of giant robots.
Oh, also, tell them what the Doomsday device is called.
Okay, I had to look this up because they kept saying it in a weird way. The Doomsday device is called ESTOC, ESTOC. This is an acronym for the Environmental Defragmentation System. Lovely, lovely English.
Yeah.
And ESTOC, and this is the reason that Tula was important, and this is another sort of hack move that you see in every single movie ever. It's because her dad designed the system. Okay, I guess we were both right. Everyone had one of those little collar things, but only her little collar thing could activate the Doomsday device. Because her father only trusted her, possibly our hero, Shunak, also had one that could have worked, but his was broken. And he only trusted her to make the decision about whether to reboot the world, more or less. Now, the way the ESTOC works is it's basically a giant lava device. It would activate all of the volcanoes on Earth at once and completely reboot the Earth's surface.
Which really isn't that bad of an idea, considering just how horrific the forest is.
Yes. Now, of course, here's another thing where I thought to myself, okay, finally Shunak is acting like a villain. He's a tragic villain, he's a sympathetic villain, but, you know, wiping out all of humanity to get rid of the forest is also kind of a dick move.
Yeah.
So, and this was at minute, like, 75.
Yeah.
So Agito attacks to try and save Tula, and Shunak just kicks his ass. Because, of course, Shunak is 2 to 3 times his weight.
Years of experience.
Twice his height. He's trained to fight because he's a general in an army. And he has a sword that he never uses, so it's unimportant.
Quite frankly, I don't see why a sword would matter at all anyways.
Well, because if he had used that sword, Agito wouldn't have been able to pull off what he does next.
Yes, he would have. The kid took a bullet the size of a bus.
A sword wielded by someone stronger than him would have done
the
something.
The blade would break.
Maybe. Okay, so anyways.
Maybe nothing. That's science.
So Agito grabs Shunak and turns into a tree around them both. So they're both dead.
Hooray!
Yeah, we lost our hero, but our villain is dead too. By of course, I mean, we lost Shunak, but we also got rid of Agito, so...
I was about to say, which one's which?
So Tula goes back, and she feels really sad about this because apparently in the 5 words they've exchanged in the movie, Tula and Agito have bonded.
Somehow.
And she goes in and deactivates the device, which of course causes a self-destruct sequence.
Of course!
Please, anyone out there who is going to write a fantasy or sci-fi movie, now there are valid reasons to have a time limit. I think one of the best time limits out there was from Star Wars Episode 4, where there was only a limited window of time until the Death Star got into firing position.
You're a nerd.
Make it so that it isn't just, oh yeah, and the base has a self-destruct system.
You're a nerd.
Well, yes, I am.
A huge nerd.
This podcast will be a success if we can just make one writer forego the use of a self-destruct device as the climactic scene to a movie. So at this point, you think to yourself, okay, Tula is trying to get out of there before it self-destructs. Yeah, she lost, I suppose, what we can grudgingly call the love of her life. Very grudgingly.
Somewhat, I guess.
And she has decided that this world isn't so terrible after all.
Somehow.
Because even though it's full of horrible forces that rule over humanity,
And try to kill her at every turn.
And if just one human breaks the rules, they shut off the water supply. And it's full of people who she doesn't have anything in common with. She decides that she loves this world. She says she wants to go back to Agito's town and never leave there again and be with Agito. So you know what?
Stockholm Syndrome!
Yes. This movie just reminds me so much of Earthsea. In Earthsea, if they had stuck to their guns with their philosophical message and killed Teru, I would have had much more respect for it. Similarly, here, if there had been a bittersweet ending where Tula had made peace with the present she lived in, but still didn't get Agito back, I would have had much more respect for it.
I won because the story is still retarded.
Okay, so then we cut to the forest hive mind. The forest, when you die, I guess you return to it and are completely absorbed by it. At least when you die the way he died, which was by turning into a tree.
Oh, yeah. Treeification!
And Shunak is there too, and he says that, well, now that I'm in the forest, I'm not here to fight you anymore. Everything's cool now. So obviously being absorbed into the forest mind controls you.
Yeah, apparently.
Because, you know, awesome, tragic scientist trying to reverse his mistake would have tried to subvert the forest.
It's the Borg.
Yes.
It's the Borg made of wood.
Which fools people who like the science versus technology thing into thinking that they were the side of good.
Nature. You said science versus technology. You meant
science versus nature. Well, this is a case of mad science versus all other mad technology.
This is mad science versus mad science.
Yes.
That's all this is. The real nature is already destroyed by the forest.
Which sounds very ironic, but
yes, rain no longer falls, there's no more natural tree life. All that's left is this alien creature.
And the few humans it allows to survive.
Created by mad science that is subjugating and controlling humanity. And it is shown that to live beyond the forest, you have to live in an utter hellhole, because the forest will not allow anything else.
Right, outside the forest there's only desert. So, Tula grabs the tree that was Agito and starts just to cry. Agito, I want you back! Agito!
We're working by first Pokemon movie rules here.
Yes! Except the first Pokemon movie I thought was less of a cop-out.
Yeah!
And then the forest's hive mind tells Agito, it isn't your time yet. Go back.
Hey, could you fix my father too? No! But my father, he's not even a full tree, like, go back!
Go back and go have stupid children with Tula. Because we are a selective and we want only the heroes to be happy.
Do I have
to? Yes! Aww, I wanted to marry that one girl who loved me in town. This was just a fling. No, that would have been so funny if that had been the case. Because when we get to Pink-Haired Girl, you'll understand the beauty and simplicity of her character.
She is not even simple. She's a complex flower.
Yes. So they run back to town. Day is saved. Forest gets to win forever because they've destroyed the only thing that could possibly get rid of it. Yay.
And I think, didn't the forest show that it was making new humans?
I don't know. Was that after the credits started? Because as soon as the credits started, I just bailed.
I just remember that for some reason.
Yeah. So that was the story. Now, the last movie we did, we talked more about the characters than the story, because the characters were more had more going on than the story, and also because you learned more about the story by exploring the characters. So
let's go on to characters!
Point three, characters.
I think we should start with what is truly the best character of them all. The most well-rounded, well-founded, just gosh darn lovable character of them all, Pink-Haired Girl.
Yes, her name
doesn't even have a name.
No, her name
doesn't even have a name.
Her name is Minka.
Her name is not there. Her name is Pink-Haired Girl, and you know it. She is the epitome of pink-haired girlness.
Yes, even though her hair is red, but her outfit is pink, which compensates.
I honestly forgot that her hair wasn't pink. Such is her pink-haired girlness.
So, her personality is that she wants to marry Agito.
And that's it.
And there is the genius. See, other characters have more than one note.
They actually talk to the one they love. Share a scene with them.
Right. You know, you get the impression that Agito is completely uninterested because he finds her annoying. This is a strange analogy, but the closest I can come up with is the relationship between Sonic the Hedgehog and Amy Rose.
I hate you.
Sorry, I watched Let's Play, and that maybe had that on the mind.
Just, oh God.
As you can tell from our half hour of sarcasm.
Nearly an hour by now.
Yes, nearly an hour by now. This is such a non-character. She exists to show Tula this at the town. She exists to show Tula the town. She also exists to blab to the so-called villains where Tula is.
Yeah, that's really her entire function in life. All she ever does, all she ever is.
And this is somebody who was one of the alleged protagonists' childhood, I'm not going to say sweetheart, but somebody that he saw every day.
Yeah, she doesn't even do anything in the end.
And they kept giving her screen time.
Yeah, but she doesn't do anything with that screen time. She's just sort of there.
And they made such a big point out of her wanting to marry him. This was even mentioned when she wasn't on screen.
For the record, I don't think there is a single moment where the two are alone for 1 second.
The only dialogue they exchange is, I think it was Minka telling, I don't even think they talked directly. I think that...
No, they didn't.
Minka was telling Tula to go see the Elder.
The only scene that they ever shared was a group scene with a dozen other people in the room, and she was talking to Tula. And that's it. That is it.
And the other characters aren't much better, but Minka is such an excellent example of wasted time. I mean, we know the other characters, aside from Shunek, in such a shallow way. You could have cut her entirely. And you know what? If you want to have Agito and Tula have this great relationship, they did have some time alone before Shunek showed up and convinced her to come with him. But if you wanted that, have Agito be the one to show Tula around the town.
Yeah, that could have been a cute, funny, romantic scene. Instead, we got crap!
Actually, you know, that should be on the DVD box. Instead, we got crap. 5-point podcast.
Pretty much, yes. Make that a thing. Okay, pink-haired girl. She is horrible.
The reason we got her out of the way first, because, you know, every show has unimportant characters. Like, in Star Wars, you know what? No, even the random aliens in the cantina had more point. Because they built the world. Minka did not build the world. But let's move on to our legend protagonist, Agito.
I was about to ask which one.
Those of you who are observant will notice that we didn't really talk about Agito much during the story section.
At all. He's pretty much just a plot device that the Forest uses purely to do its bidding. He's a goon. He's a mook. He is the barest minimum of personality. Quite frankly, the Terminator. From the first Terminator movie, has more character and drive to be in the story than Agito.
In fact, when you think about it, if we go with the Forest equals Skynet thing, he is the Terminator.
It's worse.
I could sum up his character in the movie with one word: Tula.
That's it. That's all his motivation. He gets it.
He loves Tula, apparently.
He has nothing to do with the Forest outside of this. It's just Tula gets not even kidnapped. Tula goes of her own free will, and he decides, I'm going to become a superhero and destroy these people and bring her back to... Oh my God, he's Edward.
Okay. So, yeah, and half of his dialogue is him crying out, Tula! And you might say, Bobcat, stop with that annoying tone in your voice. That's in the dub. That's how he cried out Tula. When I said that the dub was competent and they were doing the best that they could with what they had, that's what I meant. There's only so much emotion you can wring out of Tula.
I freaking hate Agito. He doesn't have any opinions of his own. The only thing we ever see him do is steal from the forest. You'd think he'd sign up all for taking it down. Finding a way to moderate it. Something. No. First chance he gets, lamest excuse, he becomes its goon and goes to kill people for it.
For the sin of stealing water from the forest, how dare they have water to drink?
Yes. How dare they? And what's even better, he was getting that water for his father, who is a tree, because his father was doing the forest spitting. You'd think they'd watch out for one of their own, but no.
No, it's the Borg. You join up, you're a drone.
Go to hell, Agito. So yeah, I think that sums up Agito fairly well.
He made the protagonist from Tales from Earthsea look well-rounded and developed.
Yes!
And this, and incidentally, I did the research. As far as I can tell, Origin Spirits of the Past has no connection to any novel series, video game, though this would actually make a pretty decent entry to the PS1 RPG craze.
Oh god, I remember those. Legend of Dragoons was amazing.
Yeah, it feels like that sort of thing.
I wonder if I should do a Let's Play of Legend of the Dragoon. I still have it somewhere.
Maybe. I forget the point I was making with that. He honestly does feel like the sort of character where he's so undeveloped that anyone can play the game and imagine themselves in his shoes.
Yeah, because even his love for Tula comes crap out of nowhere. In fact, I don't think he ever even says he loves her. He just sort of, oh, she went away. I'm going to track her down! Give me superpowers!
I remember my point now. There is no novel, manga, series, video game, etc. that this is based on. So where Tales of Earthsea, you could arguably say, that's explained in the book. Read the book and the movie is just a visual accompaniment to the book. Agito has no such excuse. Agito is exactly the way his creators intended him to be, because there is no expanded universe.
Yeah, moving on.
Let's do Tula next.
Tula's personality is as follows. Plot device girl.
I think that's being a little unfair. After thinking about it, I think Tula is the second most developed character in the movie. Now, before you say that, isn't saying much.
And it isn't.
She is the only other character besides Shunak that you can sympathize with. Because, you know, she's a teenage girl. She wakes up in a post-apocalyptic wasteland with an evil force trying to destroy her. And everyone just seems to assume that she'll get used to living in squalor at the beck and call of an evil forest hive mind collective.
The way we really get drawn to attention, the ladder thing that almost certainly killed billions of kids. Okay, maybe not that many, but only because the forest murdered everyone else. Almost certainly murdered kids is through her. The main character, Agito, runs across it like an idiot. And then stops and asks her what's wrong with her as she struggles to get past this rickety, rusted, horribly unsafe thing.
Yeah, she just does not belong in that world at all. So you can understand that if a nice, handsome older man who claims to have known her father comes along and says, you can help me fix the world, that she would go along with him.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Everyone you know and love is dead. Why not try to save the world?
Right. So, while she's kind of a typical character of this type, I give them points for not having her immediately acclimate. Because this could have very easily turned into a thing where she immediately acclimated and had to be kidnapped.
Yeah. No, she goes of her own free will. That just incites super stalker mode in her male companion that is not even a romantic interest until the very end because she's sad that he turns into a tree. Dear God, I hate this movie. Okay.
Shunak. We've talked about Shunak.
He is the hero of the movie. He is the moral center. Because something I realized, his plan wouldn't have doomed humanity. There were still likely dozens of other places that had devices like the one that Tula was hanging out in. Humanity could have survived. In fact, that's probably what those things were made for, to survive that.
And the worst you could accuse him of is being short-sighted. He betrayed the army that he was working for, and there are some characters in that army, but we're not going to talk about them because...
they don't matter!
The army only exists to, one, get him from point A to point B, and two, have a non-important giant robot fight. And giant robot fight is overstating it. And it's a bunch of giant robots just standing there shooting motionlessly at the E-Stock, to no effect.
I miss Red Baron. Maybe we should watch Super Robot Red Baron one day.
Yeah, that could work. That'd be interesting, at least.
Better than this, Drek.
Yes, it would be. So, Shunak, you know, the worst you can accuse him of is short-sightedness. He didn't get a population together to survive the coming apocalypse of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a man of science who destroyed the world with his arrogance, or not arrogance even, his impatience, because he wanted to help people. Burke said earlier that the point of it was to colonize the moon. It also had the objective of turning deserts into habitable regions. He wanted to help people.
Yeah, he did. And just through fatal flaw, he became a tragic hero and destroyed the world. Much like Frankenstein.
Yes. And then he woke up years later, but gave in to the Forest to get power.
The Forest just let him.
And when he started questioning the way things were, they chucked him out of the town.
Yeah, because how dare you think different, have different ideas, or want different things?
Don't you realize that the humans in the Forest can live together?
We're like elves, but, you know, working for a horrific Lovecraftian entity. But before we get to final thoughts, before we wrap this up, we have one last character to touch on.
The Forest. Now, in the past, we've talked about all of the minor characters that we've seen so far. In fact, in the case of Nanaka 617, I talked about minor characters we hadn't seen yet.
Yeah. And in Squid Girl, we talked... all the characters are pretty much minor characters.
Yes. This time, no. I mentioned Minka because of how unimportant she was.
Yeah, she was the crowning moment of unimportant. She was the pink-haired girl of the pink-haired girls. The pink-haired girl from Baka and Test was more important than her.
Well, that's not exactly a fair comparison because... No, you're right. You know, the girl from Baka and Test was a plot device, too. At least she got to be a plot device.
Yeah.
Minka did nothing that another character couldn't have done. Her brother, Kane, who at first looked like he was Agito's best friend and possibly adventure companion.
Sidekick?
No. He stayed behind for the adventure.
He just sort of disappeared from the movie. He didn't even do anything.
All the other characters? No, unimportant. We're not going to talk about them.
His father. He's a tree.
His father had no character beyond...
I'm a tree!
Being a tree and being pro-forest.
I'm a tree! Look at me, I'm a tree!
But the Forest as a character is important, because it is treated like the protagonist of the movie, and it is the worst villain we have encountered so far.
It is the most vile villain we have met all of these shows.
This includes Heat Guy J, where you had a mad bomber who wanted to destroy the city just to get it back at a couple people.
And had... you know, a psychopathic man-child of a mafia boss.
This counts Tales from Earthsea, where you had a mad necromancer who was willing to doom the entire planet just so he could stay immortal.
And choked out a little girl until she died and turned into a dragon and killed him. No, this is the worst. You know why? There's a reason why. The Forest wins.
You know, there seems to be a trend with vegetable villains and winning, because I remember when I was a kid...
What, the Charlie Sheen?
I remember that when I was a little kid, the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes cartoon, it was a big deal that the villains actually won at the end of one of the seasons.
I have never seen the movies, I've never seen the cartoon. We should watch that sometime.
That would be amusing. See, this is how bad this movie is. We keep talking about things that really aren't in our area of review, and we'd rather be watching them for this instead.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Yes!
All right. So the forest is a collective hive mind that absorbs people. It gives them great power to do its bidding, but then they wind up as helpless trees who need their children to bring them water. And it's treated like, well, why wouldn't humans and the trees be able to live together?
Oh, also, just in case we didn't make this clear, the forest withholds water from humanity. Unless humans do exactly what it wants, you don't get any water. You can go die, as far as it cares. It is an amoral, inhuman abomination of nature.
And science.
And science. This is not, I repeat, this is not Mother Nature getting fed up with humanity's antics.
This is not, going back to James Cameron's Avatar, this is not a seemingly suspicious native life form that might seem creepy, but okay, it came out of nature. It belongs here, humans don't.
No, it's an invader. It's no different than the aliens from any alien invasion story. The difference is,
we are meant to sympathize with them.
Yeah, this would be like if the Borg came back to Earth and they were presented as morally right and correct. And how dare we think otherwise?
Man, that feels good to get that off my chest.
I hate the forest!
Yes, it makes me want to go buy the oldest, least gas-efficient car I can find and drive it constantly.
I was really, really afraid when I was watching this that it was going to get some kind of green acid soap. But then I realized, wait, that's not right at all. Because this isn't nature!
This is mad science trumping mad science.
Oh, dear God, I'd rather have Saruman controlling my world.
Right, at least Saruman is one guy who will eventually get old and die.
This is just an all-powerful, unstoppable entity that really does not care for humanity.
And our hero, quote-unquote, just took out the only weapon capable of giving humans a fighting chance against it.
Pretty much. And God help you if you want to live beyond the forest. God help you. Final thoughts.
Point five. Final thoughts. We've said everything we wanted to say about this.
No, I could still rage for a few more hours, but...
This is already going to be our longest review ever, I think.
I don't know if it's going to be that long, but it is terrible.
Yeah. Now, like we said, the reason Burke wanted to start with point four is because that is honestly a really positive part of this movie. It is great to look at.
It is beautiful. It is well made. The dub is pretty much well done. The only thing that stops this from being a good movie, because here's the thing. You can polish a turd. Mythbusters prove that. You can polish a turd. You can make it as shiny as a mirror. You can see your reflection. You can put little gold trimming on it. You can make it smell like flowers. But at the end of the day, when you bite down, it's still a turd!
Yes, this thing... How to put this?
Only watch it for free. Preferably pirate it.
Yeah. If you want to see a nice animation showcase, this is a nice animation showcase. If you really, really liked James Cameron's Avatar and you don't understand the people who think that the main character losing his humanity is creepy, then you might like it.
I don't have nearly that opinion on James Cameron's Avatar. I don't think that really applies with this, at least that aspect. But quite frankly, that doesn't matter because the sentiment is the same.
Yeah, it's just a creepy movie. When you think about it. Now, if you just want to watch it and turn your brain off, go ahead. You might enjoy it. There's some nice animation. There is some emotion behind it. It's just that there's no brain.
I hate this movie.
So, moving on to better things. What are we reviewing next week, Burke?
Why would I know? Oh, right. That's because I looked at it earlier. Oh, God. Okay, next week we're doing Spice and Wolf. And I swear to God, if it's not better, Thomas, I am raping you. But first, I need to go put Ben in his dress, because quite frankly, I am very tired of staring at his naked butt. Come here, Ben. Shut up and enjoy it!